Chapter 4.
Why, oh why, can't I fly over the rainbow?
Tap, tap, tap.
I wait impatiently. I click my shoe against the cafe counter, waiting for my coffee. To say that I'm a little riled up after the curtain incident is an understatement.
Tap, tap, tap.
I feel like a kid. I am 34 years old now. I will not let another person get to me like this.
Tap, tap.
Coffee's up.
Tap. Finally.
I frantically rumble through my purse, looking for my phone.
Wait, I don't need my phone.
Putting my purse down on the counter, I look around to make sure no one saw this episode of looking through my purse like a madwoman. I am in this space of embarrassment and wrongness again. Marvel's harsh words linger over me like clouds right before a storm. What gave him the right to say that I was not well myself? I know that I am having a difficult time lately, but he had no right to say it. He doesn't even know me.
Keep no secrets, especially to yourself. They separate and destroy. Be honest and truthful of how you are feeling.
I remember Marvel's words in class.
Oh, shut up!
I snarl, talking back to my thoughts. The only feelings that I want to admit is the fact that Marvel made me so mad today. I feel the humiliation start to kick in. I am determined to figure this out. I take the coffee from the server, who asks if I'm okay. I'm fine, thanks. And the shut up wasn't meant for you. I apologize as I make my way to a table. I decide to sit inside instead of going back to my car. Perhaps I need people around me right now. Back in the 7th grade, Marvel was the only person that believed me when I told him that the words moved around the page, and that's why it was easier to read a page while moving around.
Oh, if the words are moving, you should be allowed to move, Dorothy,
Marvel had said. He placed me in the back of the classroom so I could move and I wouldn't disturb the others, but didn't forget about me like most of the other teachers did. I just don't understand why I am so mad. Marvel knew how to keep me on task, which was a great challenge for me. They seemed to get so frustrated with me and gave up so easily. But what they weren't doing was putting the responsibility back on me. He always made me accountable, and I respected that. I would listen because I respected him. I sensed his kindness and his truth. I felt his integrity. So why am I so mad right now? I reach in my purse again, but this time for some paper to write down my mixed-up feelings. Marvel's words about feeling at home on the basketball court were really sweet, but he said I was broken, not well. Why didn't I tell him to go to hell? I don't have that skill to say what is on my mind, especially when it comes to my emotions. I sit with the pen in my hand, and nothing comes.
Tap, tap, tap with the pen.
I wait. I wait some more. Suddenly, the words show their presence and come straight towards me like a tornado that is traveling too fast to stop. My mind that was once clear on suppressing unwanted feelings. If not suppressed, it could lead to socially unacceptable outcomes, now clouding with thoughts and emotions of anger, embarrassment, judgment, and hurt. My mind starts to spin, internally vomiting everything that was learned about the brain at my ADHD coaching academy. My emotions are activating my anterior insula and the anterior cingulate cortex,
which is beginning to interfere with my prefrontal cortex, which is supposed to be for executive functioning, more knowledge learned from the academy. Get out of your head. Write your emotions. Why would I feel rejected? I just wanted to tell him what I was doing these days, and the least he could do is accept me. I look up. Gosh, do I need acceptance that bad? My brain always gets me in trouble. Ugh, this brain of mine. I guess the consequences of possibly throwing one's shoes at someone else's new house would definitely not be pleasant. I laugh to myself as I look down at my red Converses and have a vision of throwing my red sneakers at Marvel's new house. Tap, tap, tap. I cannot understand why this is getting to me. I write, "Why can't I just fly over the rainbow so I don't have to feel this?" That is a little corny. What is it, Dottie? What is wrong? I haven't felt like this for the past year and a half, since I started the medication. These emotions and feelings have overridden that little pill today. They are way stronger and more powerful than any pill. It was only a stimulant anyway. I continue to write. My brain. My writing is interrupted by laughter that penetrates through the doorway of the quiet coffee shop. The laughing is so loud that the noise has everyone's focus in the place, including the employees. But I know that laughter. I look up, and to my surprise, it's the kids.
Hi, Mom.
Three little pint-sized munchkins yell from across the cafe, each showing off their beautiful personalities that always bring a smile to my face. My oldest son, Christopher, who always would smile and say, "Busy," when I would ask him to do something for me, darts towards me and says, "What's up, Mom?" My oldest girl, Megan, who will turn 9 soon, floats in behind Chris with a smile. She tells me of the activities that she will be involved in, down to the very last detail. My youngest girl, Casey, in that tiny little body of hers, would make certain everything that was not said or talked about would be mentioned out loud.
How are you guys? I miss you guys already.
I feel the glow coming to my face as I reach up to playfully ruffle my son's hair. My ex, Don, making a connection with me, strolls in behind them with Casey by his side. Casey, our little entrepreneur, tugs my ex's arm and says,
"Hey, Dad, we're hungry. Dad, why don't you just give me the money? I can take care of it,"
she playfully demands. Of course, he hands the money over to her without hesitation, exchanging a familiar smile with me that we have done millions of times since Casey was as young as 2. She was only 6, but always ready to keep up with her siblings. Megan, with her cautious eyes, checks to see if I am visibly upset. Not seeing anything to concern herself with, she leans into my shoulder, wraps her arm around me, then gazes around to see if she knows anyone at the cafe. Christopher, almost 11 years old, waves to one of his friends over in the corner, but sits across from me at the table.
"What's up, Mom? What have you been doing with your time? Rearranging our closets? Or putting away my cups that I left on the kitchen table?"
My ex smiles at me, and we both watch the mixed emotions of everyone in the family unit. Don and I turn to Casey as she drops some of the coins on the floor. As Casey picks up the coins, she then turns to me.
"How you doing, Madre? We were at the bank today and we got lollipops."
As Casey picks up the last coin from the floor, I pull her close to me,
her face full of life. It shines. Her eyes so ever-present. She, unlike her mom and older sister, is not a fan of floating out of her body and going with the flow. She always seems to be right there in the moment. They purchase their drinks, and we all make our way to the door. The kids follow me to my car, and my ex makes his way to his. The kids give me a group hug, and one at a time, I kiss them all on their foreheads, just like I did when they were babies.
"Love you guys," I whisper.
I feel the love that wraps around me, feeling the love in their eyes for me, but don't soak it in fully. Instead, I start to fill the space with unimportant chatter and details.
"I love you, Mom,"
each one of them expresses. They walk towards their father, who is almost at his car. As the distance between us grows, my ex calls out from his car.
"So you'll get them after school on Tuesday on the 12th? That's a little over a week, right?"
he says.
"Right. Back to business."
"Right,"
I reply and wave. I attempt to push the pain down a little further not to feel it. It still feels awkward, knowing that I am the reason for his pain. What I do know is that it was the right decision, but that doesn't make the pain go away.
Will it ever go away?
I wish them farewell and walk toward my car, remembering that I am still wearing the clothes that I had on yesterday. It was time to go home. I turn around to head towards my car, and before I take a step, a face suddenly appears, a face I never thought I would see again. There she is, Elizabeth. Elizabeth, a girl that I haven't seen since I disappointed her so.
"You don't remember me, do you, Dorothy?"
she asks. Her face seems to be unsure. "Of course I remember you, Elizabeth," I murmur. "People call me Dottie now."
"Are you back from Kansas?"
Elizabeth continues, making no acknowledgement of my preferred name.
"I saw on Facebook that you were living in Kansas."
"Ah, Facebook. Made stalking legal since 2005. Whatever, Dottie. Answer her." "Yes, I am," I answer. Elizabeth and I continue to chat about family, kids, and career. Just 5 minutes, and our worlds are caught up. No more, no less.
"Bye, Dorothy."
"Bye, Elizabeth." I finish up with Elizabeth, get in my car, and sink into the driver's seat, resting my head on the steering wheel. I need to write this down, and I need to somehow get over all this guilt. My husband, and now, Elizabeth. But how? I grab the blank paper from the passenger seat and start to write. In 9th grade, I had become friends with Elizabeth, who started confiding in me quickly after we met. One day, I received a letter from her in my first period class. Elizabeth writes to me that her brother was molesting her little sister, and mentions that he used to abuse her, too. I was shocked by the letter. By 7th period English class, I couldn't contain myself any longer. I decided to open the letter and write back to her. For those moments while I was writing, I became this person that I never knew was inside of me. In detail, I told her that she must tell and do this and do that. While writing this, I also shared some personal feelings. I went on and on about my feelings about life and some other things that we discussed. Things like, I don't care if I smoke or drink anymore. Who cares anyway? What does it matter? I was hyper-focused like I never had been before. Being hyper-focused allowed me to block out everyone and every sound, everything around me. That is why I didn't immediately notice the teacher standing right beside me saying, "Dorothy, can you hear me? What are you writing? That doesn't look like the English assignment." My heart raced as I watched the paper leave my desk into the teacher's hands. No! The next several months of school were hell. The authorities at my school spent the first couple days probing me about who this person was and how important it was for this family to get the help they needed. I kept saying that I would handle it. If I would have known then how they were going to handle it, I would have lied. I would have said that my writing simply was created from my unbelievable imagination, and I made the whole thing up. But nope. Naive little me gave in. I caved under the pressure of the adults, who, by the way, were interrogating a naive little girl who was not in the presence of a guardian. In the back of my young mind, I was thinking and hoping that they could do something about it. Elizabeth was harassed, and it didn't let up until she called her mother. They tortured her and handled it so poorly. In the end, their priority was to keep this hush-hush and make it go away. They never even told my mother. The fact that they lied to me, betrayed my trust, and never helped Elizabeth's family was so disheartening and disappointing. This created challenges for me, and doubt in the Catholic Church, authority, adults, and anyone for that matter. I knew that those in authority could not be trusted, and if you ever wanted something done, you had to rely on yourself. Elizabeth and I remained friends throughout high school, but I always felt this guilt for having exposed her and never truly being able to help. Years later, Elizabeth asked me to be in her wedding. She asked me, and I couldn't go. I just couldn't face them. I just couldn't relive that mistake again. The guilt and the fact that I didn't help her family. Father Rich even called me to say that he couldn't believe that I wasn't able to make the wedding. He said, "This is just not right, Dorothy." Father Rich married Elizabeth and her husband, and later married Don and me. I loved her. I still love her. The friendship eventually faded, just another casualty from one's past. I better get home before I meet anyone else from my past. I return home, only to find my house in disarray. The kids had messed up the kitchen, left the lights on and the Wii game portal blasting on the TV. The kids were not supposed to be there. Typical. How frustrating. I find a note from the kids that read, "Where are you, Mom? Your beautiful, adorable, awesome children are here. We decided to come here before going to Dad's house. Love, Megan, Casey, and Christopher." My feelings of frustration instantly changed after feeling the love of the note. I am a sucker. The kids could always count on me being home, doing laundry, reorganizing their rooms, or helping them with an emotional or social issue. Although, when it came to homework, that was their dad's department. He was just so smart, one of his many hidden talents. He always seems to keep his amazing abilities under wraps, along with many other things. I was blessed to work from home after reaching number one in my company. The kids liked the fact that I worked out of the house and that I was easily accessible to lend an ear or help finish a project. Things did change after I started taking Adderall, though. They told me that I seemed more focused, and they weren't sure if they liked it. With this newly developed focus, they would say that they now had to deal with a mom that made more sense. A mom with more clarity, who had put more responsibility back on them, which was made clear, not so great for them. Marvel lingers back into my thoughts as I walk in the living room to the sofa. I notice how tired I am as I make my way to the couch. I grab a pen, attempt to write some more, but sleep slowly takes over. Tap, tap. Down went the pen.